I'd lots rather be down there with you than up here, but the advantage, if you're looking for motivation to be up here, is looking at your faces and seeing the miracles. I love seeing your smiling faces. And that's what it says in our closing. It says, although you may not like all of us, you'll come to love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. And I know you already love you, and that's why I'm smiling. I'm also laughing because you have to. So my name is Diane. Thank you. That was nice. I live in within walking distance of the state capital in South Carolina. I live in West Columbia in South Carolina with my husband. And I attend the Love Bunch Al-Anon Family Group. And you're welcome to attend on Tuesdays at noon. It's in Columbia. And we would love to have you. And it's a wonderful group of really people that are looking to recover, and I love them dearly, and I miss them right now. I was born in 1950. I was born into an alcoholic family. Mama, me, and my sister grew up together and loved each other, and Daddy ran around and was drinking. In 1960, March 3rd of 1966, Daddy went into AA, and these men came to the house. And it's Maine, so you know it was cold. And they had trench coats on and hats and boots that slid over their shoes. And Daddy was ready and dressed to go. And he had drunk his share. And the man came and said, "We're sorry, Carol. You've misunderstood. This is a family program. The whole family goes." And they took me and Rosemary to Alateen and took Mama to Al-Anon, and Daddy went to AA. And Daddy died in 2007 with 42 years of sobriety. Thanks for the applause. I do want to take credit for that. So, shaking my family tree meant bottles would fall out. There were alcoholics everywhere, all of them. That's how they spent all of their summer months. We weren't together much in the winter, but all of my aunts and uncles and cousins and everybody, I probably got 20 family members in AA, and the other 20 should be in Al-Anon. I'm sure of that. But I joined in Alateen. We had, in 1967, we had the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous for literature in our Alateen group and in our Al-Anon groups. But one of the first conflicts I remember in Al-Anon was getting rid of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was conflict. It was really, people were starting their own groups where they could still use the Big Book. It was an advantage to me to not have the Big Book, because the first 10 years of Daddy's sobriety, I had the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I could tell him whenever he was making a mistake. And I did. I was very helpful about that. But after 10 years of Mama being in Al-Anon and me being in Alateen, my sister didn't take. She went in a different direction. But I was a faithful daughter of my father and went to Alateen to help Al-Anon eventually. I only was in Alateen a year. And I went to Al-Anon to help Daddy stay sober. But after 10 years, my mother went into the cellar and shot herself to death. And I decided that maybe I needed something stronger than making Daddy sober. Maybe I needed to use the program for myself. And so I went on my merry way with Al-Anon, fighting every step of the way. But I didn't know anything about having relationships at that time. And I ended up married to a person whose favorite author was the guy that wrote Pull Tab to Open. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how. I stayed married to him for 19 years, other than I worked. I'm an engineer, and that doesn't require being real strong at having relationships. It requires, for me, it required technology and working with technology and having my head down, and isolation was a real good place for me. I went to the meetings, and I read the literature, and I did not want to be sick. And I did not want to commit suicide. after 19 years with that husband, I finally got a divorce and promised I would never marry again. But I fell in love with a person who was honest and decent and handsome and brilliant and just irresistible. And so I did get married. Did I mention he was an alcoholic? Did I mention he was active? We are still married today. He's in this room. Last week he celebrated 16 years of sobriety with the help of me. And with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous and God. You notice I keep missing that God part, because that's the key to solving. It was really cool. Conflict resolution, just read these cards and you'll be done. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
This is conference-approved Al-Anon literature. Flip cards. I guess it must be a real problem, conflict resolution. For me, I never needed a meeting. I needed an exorcist. But apparently, you can do these and you don't need an exorcist, and you just go to meetings and do these little cards. And so it talks about, who knew? So I ought to find out where my stuff is. Okay. Yeah, that was my problem. I found being with an alcoholic, like I said, I didn't have any idea what a relationship was. I didn't have one with the first husband. He was physically abusive. I stayed away from him, and I worked, had my head down. I was an engineer. I worked with computers. Not much conversation there. Computers are my friends. I did not have fights. I did not have conflict. And if I did, I'd just take a hammer to the monitor. I did not have a problem with that. I had more than one monitor. But it wasn't funny. That wasn't meant to be funny. That's true. You don't do that. But my way of talking with the alcoholic was the same way. I grew up in Maine, and Maine is surrounded by Canada, and you speak French there. Well, I didn't ever learn French. I'm not good at languages, and I'll admit that, even though I am good at math and science, I'm not good at languages. So my way of having French people understand me is to speak louder. And that's what I did with the alcoholic. Just speak louder. They didn't understand a word I was saying. But what Al-Anon said, and they picked me for conflict resolution. I'm married to an alcoholic. Okay. I had a physical problem. I became disabled, so I can't commute back and forth to work. And work is, I was a human doing, not a human being, so it was really important I had a job. Otherwise, I would be cleaning right this minute, because I was a human doing. And so we got this business, and our business is on the first floor, and we live on the second floor. So we live in the same place we work, and we work at the same business. Who should be doing conflict resolution? What do? We're in accounting. I do the computer part. He does the accounting part. Who does he fight with? The IRS. I mean, conflict resolution, he wants to resolve all of his conflicts, and he wants to win, and that means the same thing if he's handling me. Fortunately, he has a program, and he works it, because if he gives me any grief, I need an exorcist, and I make him call his sponsor. So anyway, what this is it starts out with tradition one in our conflict resolution flip cards. I mean, aren't these convenient? It must be important. It starts out with tradition one. It says, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress to the greatest level depends upon unity. So it starts talking about the spiritual principle about unity. And we don't focus on one person's needs. I've been hearing people talk here that said, if he was happy, I would do anything to make him happy. If he was happy, if she was happy, then life was okay. And that doesn't work for us. Neither one of us feel like it's our job to make the other person happy. Both of us feel it's the person's job to make them happy. If they're not happy, they have a problem, and they need to find a solution for that. But it's not my problem to make him happy. I can make him unhappy. I do have a sponsor. Did I tell you that? He doesn't fight this all by himself. I've got a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. But what we had to find out, especially in our business, because we worked together, we had to find out what was our common goal. And our common goal with business is to make money for both of us, to be profitable in our business. So that we have to find a focus and find out what that common goal is and be unified that we have the same goal and not a winner and a loser. Although we love sports. We love winners and losers. We would love to tell you our favorite ball game, but those outside entities, they always get in the way. So then it flips. Look at this. You all have these spiritual principles, the traditions, right? This is not a surprise. For our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are trusted servants. They do not govern. Now, if you own a business, don't you think you should govern? What is the whole bonus? But our business has to be centered on a higher power. And I'm not it. Who knew? Shocked me. But we have to set aside. We have the freedom of fear. We give that to a higher power. We give our fears in our business or for each other to a higher power, a higher authority. And that higher authority keeps coming. It's real valuable throughout all of the conflict resolution that we have. We have fear of financial problems. We have fear that a project won't get done. We have fear that we'll lose a client. That can cause conflict. And if we look to see if our higher power is first, sometimes that's all it takes to get rid of the conflict. Make sure our goals are the same. Make sure we're using that higher power. So we just flip. Isn't that easy? Just keep going through these. It is not rocket science. Tradition 3, the relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership, I don't even want to read that part. Whether I have a friend or family member, I know whether I have a requirement for membership. And I obviously am qualified to be here. And I qualify myself because I have all the things, all the illnesses that brought me here in the first place. I still can find them and I can still react to them. While my dad was drowning in booze, I was drowning in betrayal. I was lost, angry, unloved, lonely, abandoned, confused, worthless, defeated, feeling like a failure, depressed, unhappy, broken, used, hated, devastated, trapped, and frantic. And with a higher power and a singleness of purpose, I can get rid of those things myself, and I can be a reminder from him if that's the direction he's heading in, but he can also remind me because we're a common union. We're a part of, but we're separate, but we're a part of. I am not him, and I do not feel a loving relationship needs to be attached. That's a good thing. So with a singleness of purpose, we know that we're not distracted by trying to do this job or making that person happy. We're trying to get this problem solved, and we're focusing on that as an opportunity to use all these flip cards. Let me see. It says autonomy would be, gives you the spiritual principle. I mean, it's not even a guessing game. It's not a good one anyway. It's not like Jeopardy. Tradition 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole, which is sort of autonomy is self-governing, and that means that we have to be self-governing. We can't affect another accounting firm, or we can't affect another person, or we can't take a client and pull it into us. We're autonomous ourselves, and a client can't take us and use them and use us against ourselves on behalf of that client. And we have to stand autonomous, just as we stand autonomous in our marriage. I am me, and he is him. And we're both big enough to be twins. So we can be separate. We don't have to be one individual. Oh, wait. They don't give me very long for this. Okay, tradition five. Flip it, see? Okay. Each alanine group has but one purpose. I love this one. To help families of alcoholics, we do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves. Thank you, AA. By encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. Isn't that wonderful? That's compassion and understanding and being attractive by using my own recovery, my own, oh my God. Lost a flip card. Well, we're not doing this one anymore, honey. Attracting other people to recovery. I think that's what the thing about helping, being understanding to our alcoholic relatives. It doesn't matter if my husband is drinking or not drinking. To me, it doesn't affect my life. I have a rubber band around my own checkbook. I'm fully self-supporting. The program taught me all this because when I came into these traditions, I had already done my 12 steps. So I knew that it said to practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's what these do, is practice these principles in all of our affairs. So once again, it was just having me to get rid of the pain that I felt in my life, because when I was working the program, after Mama committed suicide, I flatlined with pain. And Al-Anon gave me permission to live again. But the only way I can live again and not be afraid to commit suicide is if I work all of these spiritual, and we have 36 spiritual principles, and our steps are for our recovery. Our traditions are for unity. That's why we use them in the group. Unity is other people, our relationships. And then the concepts are for service. And that's our business, how we handle our business. And there's lots of really cool concepts that we use in our business. Participation is the key to harmony. Have you ever done the dishes all by yourself? I mean, really? Can use it that way, or you can say, I need to participate in this life and not leave all the decisions to somebody else. Oh, God, did we do five? Because I dropped a card. I lost my place. Six. One spiritual aim. Six. Our family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we need to always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't need to tell you. What are we doing this weekend? We're cooperating. We enjoy their company. That's why we're here. We enjoy their company. We love them. We hate them. Well, we love them. And we hate them. And we want them to get better, don't we? But that's all we want, is the good things. But unfortunately, we can't do for somebody if they can do it for themselves. We can do all the self-help and services part of my volunteer work, is part of my existence. But I go and find people that can't do for themselves. And those are where I get my nurturing fill. Not for the people, not doing for people that can do for themselves. So here we find out that we're not diverted by any everyday problems, and that we're separate, totally separate. We're not affiliated with them or any outside organization. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, and I can tell you, if we talk about the Confederate flag, we are going to have conflict. You know what's been in the news. If you don't know, see me. I will tell you. My favorite. Here we are, tradition seven. Oh, I got to watch Clyde. Tradition seven. Hi, Clyde. Clyde's the timer. Shh. Tradition seven. Everybody should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. That's a wonderful thing to be, not dependent on somebody else for money. That's good. And that's what Al-Anon wanted us to know, that. But being fully self-supporting, that means I have to make me happy. Oh. There's no sense waiting around. Today is the day. Today is the day to be responsible for me. Today is the day to get rid of that work that I've been dreading. Today is the day that I speak in front of you so I can rest tomorrow. No, actually, I'll be with you. I'm a Mias, so I'll be with the Alateens tomorrow. no rest there. That's, they say service is gratitude in action, and I am so grateful for Alateen, but I'm grateful enough. Thank you. No more. No more. I'm 65. When can you retire from Alateen service? They don't want an old white-haired woman in their room. They don't. They really don't. Get some young people. People that use those things instead of flip cards. Hey, so you still keep flipping them. There's 12 of these. So, you know, we got to go through these. Tradition 8, Al-Anon 12-step rule, should remain forever non-professional. But our service centers may employ special workers. Non-professional. That means that Jerry doesn't need my marriage counseling services for. He's doing that. I'm only going to get to 8, you know. And that's too bad because my favorite is 12. No, they're all my favorite. Didn't I say that before? I'm repeating myself. I'm going to go right to 12 because I got a secret about this. Tradition 12, don't put up your fingers. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. I've got a trick for this. Do you have a person in your life that can't make any mistakes, that you just love so much? They're almost perfect. Do you have a grandson, a granddaughter, a daughter, a sister, somebody that is just whatever they do is remarkable? I have a niece like that. I've had a niece for a long time. My sister was 3 months pregnant with my niece when Mama committed suicide, and I was never able to have babies. Another alcoholic story for another time, because Clyde's doing this, which is 4 minutes. And so what I do is I close my eyes. If somebody comes in the room, and you know they do, and there's like, you know, I close my eyes and I think, if Amanda did that, what would I do? And I think, she would be just sweet. You wouldn't believe how cool she would be. So even though I got the impression right away I thought that person was a know-it-all, I was doing a personality thing. Now, if I close my eyes and I think of my Amanda drinking and driving, that's a principle. That's a principle. And Amanda and I have had that talk. She didn't like that talk, but we had that talk anyway. So anyway, they won't let me do the other four, so you have to call me back for the next international that we have so I can do the other four flip cards unless you buy these. They're cheap. They're really cheap. They're Al-Anon. And they're wonderful. But anyway, Clyde's down there doing four fingers. So my husband does four. Nobody got that? Your shot? A shot is one shot? It's a four-finger? Never mind, then. Never mind. I'm the wrong woman.
Thank you, Diane. Our next speaker is Jamie. She's from Orange County. She is a past delegate, panel 52. Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Jamie Crisafi. I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Alateen Family Groups, and I'm really honored to be here. The only thing good about being up here is that when I'm done, it's over, you know. My home group is the Monday Night New Way of Life Al-Anon Family Group from Cerritos, California. It's a meeting that's 40 years old next year, and I've been going to that meeting. It was my second meeting that I ever attended, and I've been going for 35 years. So anyway, when I received the email that I was asked to speak on conflict resolution using spiritual principles, I thought, oh, they asked the area with the most problems to speak on conflict resolution. And I called the WSO, and they said, no, you're not speaking on your area. You're speaking on your own personal life. And it was like, oh, geez, I got to talk about conflict resolution in my personal life. Well, I wish I had another story But this is as good as it gets. This is all that I have. And I made some notes, as you could see, but I'm not going to read from it, but I'm going to refer to it. So thank you all my friends from Southern California that told me not to read it. And I won't. I am 100% Italian. I don't know if you could tell. And that could be a disease in itself, let me tell you. I go Italian on my husband. He's 100% German, and he doesn't know what's happened when I'm zooming around being Italian on him. My grandparents were the transatlantic courageous immigrants of the early 1900s, and I always get choked up when I think about my grandmother at 12 years old coming across by herself, all by herself on a boat. And you know, I just think about the courage that it took my grandmother and my grandfather, and all four of them anyway, maternal and paternal. And my grandmother never went to school. She never learned to read or write, but she always told me, she always used to say, "Jamie, wisdom is nothing more than common sense." And she taught herself to read, and she loved the New York Yankees. So, and you know, my grandfather died the night before their 69th wedding anniversary. And he was never served store-bought bread ever. My grandmother made homemade bread for everything. So what I heard and saw as a young girl growing up was that if you love somebody, you take care of them. And you do for them. And especially the men and the children, you take care of them. And the other thing that I grew up with was, if you're going to do it right, or don't do it at all. And so it was, is it any wonder that I came here rigid, responsible, and right, and also with an over-exaggerated sense of responsibility. I mean, that was me when I walked through the doors. But growing up in an Italian home in the 50s and 60s, there were lots of conflict. But, you know, we didn't call it conflict. I mean, it was just how you lived, you know. There were parties, and everybody'd be invited, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, everybody, there'd be drinking. My uncles would start fighting physically, and you know, and then it would be forgotten about. I don't know. Sometimes they didn't speak for a while to one another, but that's kind of how it was. There wasn't any let's talk to each other and reason things out with one another. Let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. There wasn't any of that. But, you know, for me, tradition six comes to mind, because my primary purpose was to apply the principles in all areas of my life. And because of the spiritual principles of Al-Anon and working the steps 4 and 8 and 9, my relationship with both my parents was restored before both of their deaths. And I'm really grateful for that. Anyway, that's how I'm going to weave conflict resolution into my story, if you'll bear with me. I married the man of my dreams, or I should say the boy of my dreams. I was 18 and he was 19, and we promised through sickness and in health, and little did I know that alcoholism was a disease. But I was going to take care of this guy if it killed me, and it almost did. I was in a meeting this morning, and somebody said that alcoholism is the only disease where you get yelled at for having it. And he got yelled at a lot. I have a neighbor that lives next door to me. Now, I've lived in the same house for a gazillion years. I don't want to tell you how many years, because you'll know, you know, think, my God, she's old. But I was really young when I moved into the house, like in my early 20s. But anyway, this neighbor still lives next door to me. And before Al-Anon, I'd be screaming and yelling at everybody. I'd be going Italian on him, and he'd be saying, "Give him hell, Jamie." He doesn't have to do that anymore. So when I got to Al-Anon, I didn't have any tools. But inside, alcoholism had robbed me of my self-esteem and my self-worth. I looked like I had it all together. I walked through the doors. I had it all together. But the alcoholic had put that in his back pocket, and he walked out the door. He was always going to leave me. I was the Al-Anon that hung on the pant leg. I don't know about anybody else. These gals that come into Al-Anon now, you know, they're just fine. They leave and they're fine. Not me. I hang on the pant leg. And also, I had three children, and they were like a noose around my neck. And I had, when I got to Al-Anon, my daughter was in, my middle child was in kindergarten. And there was a kindergarten teacher that called me and said, "I think there's something wrong with your daughter's hearing." And I said, "No, there's nothing wrong with her hearing. She just won't mind me." And I took her to the doctor, and she had lost 80% of her hearing in one ear. So you teachers out there, keep your ears open and your eyes open for those kids because, you know, that's what happened for me. Also, I was so obsessed with living with the disease of alcoholism and so obsessed with this guy that, that I was having an overlapping relationship with his best friend. Now, for those of you that don't know what that means, I could have said it in another way, but this sounds so much nicer, overlapping relationship. And I heard it at our AFG convention this year. My friend Lynn referred to it, and I thought, you know, I like that. I'm going to use overlapping relationship. So in those early years, you know, just like Diane, right? Well, was that your name, Diane? Yeah, okay. Diane talked about there wasn't any conference-approved literature, and there wasn't. We didn't have anything to do the fourth step. There wasn't any Cal, and so step one was difficult for me, admitting my powerlessness, especially when I was holding it all together. I had this high-level job, and I had this high-pressure job, and I was holding it all together. I was taking care of the kids. I was, you know, being responsible, doing everything. And, oh, did I mention I was going to the doctor and pretending that I needed prescription drugs so that I could send them to my husband who was working in Rome, Italy, while I was having the overlapping relationship. So figure that out. I mean, it was like, it was crazy. And I was also emotionally and physically abusive to my kids, and they were really young. They're adults today, thank God. They've survived me. But you know, I was really a crazy, it was really crazy. And I got here and I found out that I had to be humble enough to be teachable and that I had to trust. And I was told that I had to trust God. Now, I had a God, and I'm not going to tell you what faith I am, but you could probably kind of figure that out. And I had a God, and I still have that faith. And when people get up and talk about how they were, I'm recovering everything, okay? So, you know, and I didn't think my behavior was insanity. But I thank God for step two, and that's my favorite step today, step two, because I still can go crazy. And but a sponsor had to teach me the meaning of trust. And by trusting that sponsor, I was able to trust a higher power. And then I was able to trust me and my decisions. And that intuitiveness and that those instincts that we have as women, and some men have them, especially Alamans, they have them. But, you know, that's sometimes my higher power speaking to me. So when I got here over 35 years ago, they weren't using words like conflict resolution, using spiritual principles. I don't think they were they? Did anybody hear that? I heard working the program. That's what I heard. I got a sponsor right away, and I would call her, and I'd be frantic, and she would say, "You sound like Humpty Dumpty needing to put all the pieces back together again." And I'd say, yeah, I feel like Humpty Dumpty. And then she'd say, "Where's God in all this? Where's God in all this? I don't know. I'm crazy." Or she'd say, "There's not a spot where God is not." So somehow, through those simple spiritual principles, step three sunk in for me. And I really did get a God of my own understanding. And those two phrases still help me sometimes and help when I sponsor women, too. And I can say, "Where's God in all this? You sound like Humpty Dumpty." Anyway, you know, gradually things improved in my life, and it's progress, not perfection. But here's the I don't know if this is progress or imperfection, but my two ex-husbands got to move in together because I didn't tell you that I married the overlapping relationship. So watch what you pray for. And then they got to move in together, the two ex-husbands. And then try to work conflict resolution when your three small children are going to visit them every other weekend. And you're trying not to be crazy over the fact that they're going to see their two dads, their biological dad and their stepdad. So anyway, but I filled all that time while they were gone with service. You finally got it, huh?
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story. And I got to buy the house three times. So that's a whole nother story. That's another Al-Anon story. I got to fill those weekends with meetings and Al-Anon service. And I love what it says in When I Got Busy, I Got Better. It says on page 2, service and recovery then are not independent of each other, Both are part of the spiritual awakening that continues to guide us. So when I got busy, I got better. And I was always trying to fill up all this, all those holes with dating. You know, that was, oh, where is he? Where's that next guy? And my sponsor would say, those are God holes. Well, I have to tell you, I dated a lot of non-conference approved men while I was out there trying to find Mr. Right. Now, my children were another story. My oldest daughter became the co-adult in our house, and we do that, at least I did, in this alcoholic home that they were being raised in. I shared a lot of inappropriate things with her and had her co-parent with me. I mean, what the heck? She was 10, 11 years old. That's what they do, you know? And you know what? Is it any wonder that she married a man that's 20 years older than her? And that she was an old lady before her time. She has friends that are older than me that are her girlfriends. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, she's a beautiful woman today. She's an overachiever. I could tell you about all the degrees and the things that she has. But the thing that I love the most about her is that she's a wonderful mom. She's an absolute amazing mom, and she didn't learn it from her mom, I'll tell you that, although they give me credit sometimes. Her skills far exceed anything I could have ever given her. My second daughter got into drugs and alcohol as a teenager, and it really rocked my world because I had a few years in Al-Anon, about 8 years in Al-Anon, and I thought I knew everything, but it gives you another, it's a whole new dimension when it's our kids. You know, it could be a husband, it could be a parent, it could be a sibling, whatever, but when it's your kids. And I'll tell you, with her, there was two things that I learned. I had to learn to let go of the dreams for her. It's harder to let go of those dreams than it is to let go of the person, I think. And I heard that in an Al-Anon meeting one night, to let go of the dreams for her. And the other thing I heard in an Al-Anon meeting for me, that is another one of my conflict resolution things that I do, and I tell the gals I sponsor, especially with adult children, I have to ask myself, am I being used or am I being useful when she asks for something? Because I always thought that the check, I was going to just write a check and fix her, make everything better. And, you know, today she's a registered nurse, and it took her a long time to get there. And I'm really proud of her today. But and thanks to Step 12, I can practice these principles in all my affairs, and that means my relationship with my daughter. I'm always going to have challenges with her and opportunities for growth, but Al-Anon's here to give me a better life, not a perfect life, and I'm always looking for that perfect life. It's been a tough road for her and I with our relationships, and we've stumbled many times along the way, but today we really do have an adult mother relationship, and it's more than I could have ever dreamed of. And so don't give up. She called me the other night to, you know, talk just about nothing. And sometimes when she used to call, the stomach would churn and it was like, oh God, what does she want now? And I don't have to do that today. My youngest child is a son who actually lives in Atlanta, Georgia. He's a principal in Fulton County, and I'm not too proud. And he reminds me that I have no filter. So I tell him that I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or if it's because I've been in Al-Anon so long, but I speak my truth. And he's the child, I think, that benefited the most from living in our home, with growing up with me having a program and bringing the traditions home. We each had a voice in that home. And tradition one gives me balance, and we each had a voice. I remember, though, one time when I told him, you have to have no C's or you can't get your license. And he was going to one of those schools that I won't tell you what religion it is. And he was doing really well, and except in Spanish, he was not doing well. And he got a C. And I said, sorry, buddy, can't get your license. And he punched a hole in my bedroom wall. Well, that was not conflict resolution, but the hole stayed there for a long time because I wanted him to see it. But I'll tell you, what he said to me later was, Mom, he said, you were always consistent, and there were always consequences. And that was my conflict resolution with him. I was always consistent, and there were always consequences. And I'd go to the meeting, You know, his dad and I were divorced. He was living all over the world. And I talked to the Alamans. And I'd say, hey, you know, my son is doing this. My son is doing that. And they'd tell me what to do. And what this program gave me was respect for my son. And you know, I think the traditions, by bringing the traditions home and being of service, it gave me that. It taught me how to respect him. So when I met my husband, Dennis, now if you're counting, he's number three. I met him 16 years ago at work, and all my holes were filled. I was done dating non-conference approved men. I was enjoying life. I was going to meetings. I was in service. And if he would have walked into that office a day sooner, I'd have passed him by. I really would have, because I liked the bad boys, as you know. He had never been married, and he had no children. Now, girls, isn't that a no-brainer? I mean, that is a no-brainer. And he was a nice guy. So, you know, and sometimes, and I work, you know, we work the concepts in our house a lot of times. He doesn't know what it is. He's a normie. But when I go off to a weekend like this, or I'm going to a meeting or something, I'm telling him what's in the, you know, this is in the, here's dinner, this is what I've cooked for you, blah, blah, blah. I'm an Italian wife, you know. And he says to me, hey, I was 55 years old when I married you. I know how to take care of myself. And I have to tell him, wait a minute. Concept 4 comes to mind for that, because we both participate in the partnership that we call marriage. Now, he is the guy, I will tell you, I was looking for some photos last weekend, and I wanted to bring them here to show my son some old photos, and I'd misplaced them, and I was sure I threw them away. I was sure they were in the recycle box. So he's the guy that goes out to the recycle garbage can and dumps the garbage can out there for me. And, you know, the alcoholic, at least the ones I was married to, would have been cursing me and screaming and yelling, and he's out there dumping the recycle. We couldn't find the pictures, couldn't find the photos. I called my son. He had been there. I said, I can't find these photos. Oh, I put them up so the boys wouldn't get them. Because, oh, I didn't mention I have 5 grandkids and 2 sets of twins. My daughter has twin girls and my son has twin boys. So he put the pictures up, and, you know, and it was just interesting because, you know, it's called keeping it simple, I guess. And, because I watch my husband with this, you know, I say, oh, here are the pictures. And he's like, you know, here he was in the recycle can. He's also the guy that goes to the cemetery with me and brings all the stuff that he needs to clean the headstone with me and clean the grass up. And I look at that and I think, you know, I wouldn't have appreciated that a long time ago. So, but then there are the mornings that he doesn't pour his cereal right. And I know that there's something going on with me. Page, December 29th in The Courage to Change. When I read that page, I thought, oh my God, they wrote it for me. Did I write that page? No, I didn't. But I catch myself because, you know, I'm criticizing every detail. I know there's something going on for me, and that there's another form of conflict within myself. And so using the spiritual principles of reading and meditating each day is something that helps me. I want to tell you a little bit about my service. I was thrown into service early. I was told to follow direction and get in the car, and that's what I did. My sponsor instilled being of service to me early. Service gives me opportunities to work on my character defects, that's for sure. Serving, they told me that serving as delegate was going to change my life. Everybody told me that. They said, it's going to change your life. And you know what? It changed my heart. That's what it did. It really did change my heart. I was going to tell you about my 15-year-old granddaughter. I'm going to close here in a minute. I have a 15-year-old granddaughter that's really, really been very disrespectful to me and very angry, and I'm not sure what's going on for her. And it's been very, very hurtful for me. It's not one of the twins. It's the single birth one. And I have to tell you that the Alateens have been the kids that have helped me a lot with that. They really have been. I've been of service in our area. As I served as the area chair and the delegate, I've been able to get really active with the Alateens and with our Southern California Alateen Conference. And they're the ones that give me the hugs that I need, and they're the ones that tell me that they love me and that my granddaughter's just a 15-year-old brat and that she's going to get through that. So since I have just a few minutes left, I was going to get into more service, but I'm not going to. I want to get into one final story that it's just another part of what conflict resolution is for me. Step three is just really, really important for me. And when I need to make a decision and I'm on the fence about something, I just turn it over. And I know that the answer is going to come. And I meditate and I say, you know, God, just lead me. Just show me what the way is for me. So when I got elected to be delegate, I was also serving in my church. I was I do funeral vigils in the church. And I absolutely love doing that. And I was struggling because I was very busy being delegate and I wasn't able to be of service in my faith community. And I'm not trying to talk about any religion here. I'm just giving you a story about what happened. I mean, as a delegate, I would never do that. So, and if there's any Al-Anon police out there, please. Okay, so anyway, I was praying about this. I was praying about it. And there's an older woman at my church who was dying of lung cancer. And she asked me, she said, when I die, Jamie, she said, will you please do my funeral vigil? And I said, okay. So I went to Ohio because I forgot to tell you I'm Youngstown, Ohio. I was born in there and raised. So I was visiting Ohio and I got the call and they said, so-and-so died. You know, can you come back and do her funeral vigil? And I said, yes. I was coming back anyway. So I'm sitting on the tarmac in Chicago, headed back to LAX, and there was an empty seat next to me, the middle seat. I'm always in the aisle because I want to be off first if there's a crash. And this young man came by. He was in his early 20s, and he said, can I sit down next to you? And I said, sure, sit down. And he sat down, and he asked me my name, and I told him my name, and I asked him his name, and we got to chit-chatting. He said, where do you live? And I said, I live in Orange County. Oh, now we were flying to LAX. He said, oh, that's where I'm headed. I'm headed to Orange County. I said, are you? Oh, why? Or he said, my grandma died. I said, your grandma died? Where did your grandma live? He said, my grandma lived in Cyprus. I said, that's where I live. I said, so what was her name? And he told me her name. And it was the woman that I was flying back home to do the funeral vigil for. And see, that's how God works in my life. That's step three for me. That's part of my conflict resolution. When I have that conflict in my head, I wait for God. Because sometimes he shouts and sometimes he whispers. I thank God for helping me find Al-Anon. And I thank Al-Anon for helping me find my God. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. And our last panelist this afternoon, I keep on saying tonight, I don't know, it's dark in here or something, is Juanita. She is from New Mexico. She is a past delegate, panel 39.
Hi, everyone. How you doing?
Hi.
I'm glad you are. I feel full of conflict. My name is Juanita, and I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. You know, when I got the email from WSO that I was... first of all, you know, we registered for this. I registered my husband, the alcoholic, and me for this, for the AA International. No conflict there. No, actually, you know, I just had time to do it. So I got all the correspondence. I mean, I got all the correspondence and all the stuff for the convention. And I'm getting all this stuff, and I'm thinking, well, it's May. You know, they usually, you know, put out this request to have people ask them if they want to do something for whatever's going on, and I haven't gotten anything. So I guess, you know, I don't have to do anything. I can just go and have fun. And then about 3-4 weeks later, I got this email. We would like to know if you would like to participate and be of service. And I thought, whoa, okay, I'll put my name in. And I didn't hear back for a while. And then all of a sudden, I got the email that said, practicing the principles of Al-Anon and conflict resolutions. I thought, really? of all things that I could have gotten, it's like, why this one? You know, why this one? And I immediately fear kicked in because I thought, I know nothing about practicing Al-Anon principles and conflict resolution. In fact, I don't know anything about any Al-Anon principles. And are there any Al-Anon principles about conflict resolution, you know? Because that's where I go. Immediately I go to this place of, I know nothing. I mean, it's like, shh, you know, it all goes. It all goes. So, you know, I didn't want to think about it. I mean, and so what am I addressing at this point? The inner conflict, right? This, because all of a sudden I thought, well, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to let go and I'm going to let God. Right? God's going to do this. So time goes on. I'm thinking, well, I really ought to look at some of my books, and I really got to pick up that little flip chart. Yeah, you know, because I know it's really good, and I haven't used it, but I know it's really good. It's great to have tools and you don't do anything with them, you know? It's like going to the doctor and getting, this is one of my husband's favorite analogies, it's like going to the doctor and getting the prescription, but you don't fill it. Right? And somehow you're supposed to magically get better. So, you know, I don't, and finally last night, I lay in bed and I was trying to come up with what I was gonna tell you guys, you know, all this good stuff. And my husband's talking to me, and he's talking to me about this, and he's telling me about that, and I'm thinking, don't you get it? I'm trying to be spiritual here. I'm trying to get myself together so that I can convey this wonderful message to everyone tomorrow. But I'll rise above it. I didn't have my earplugs in yet, because when I sleep with earplugs because he snores. Little conflict, right? And so so I don't have him in yet, and so I'm listening, I'm trying, and finally he goes, oh, I'm sorry, he says, I'm sorry. He says, and I was like, okay, whatever, you know, I'm a spiritual giant, so I'll rise above it all. And he went, bottom line is that I was struggling last night because I wanted to be perfect. It's not that I wanted to appear perfect for you, but I wanted to perfectly convey our Al-Anon message, you know, and we do have principles. We have 36 beautiful spiritual principles. They're called the steps, they're called the traditions, they're called the concepts. And when I'm in conflict, when I'm in turmoil, do you think I can think of any of them? Not a one. And not only do we have these traditions and these principles, I mean, the steps, traditions, and concepts, we have slogans. And I have a tendency sometimes to minimize the slogans. You know, really? Isn't that just like Kool-Aid? I mean, slogans. They're just like things you repeat yourself to pass the time. But, you know, it's like I was thinking and I thought, first things first. When I start thinking about first things first, years ago, when I was, you know, in the first couple of years in the program, I used to think first things first is about, well, you get up, you say your prayers, forget prayers. Back then it was like you get up, you brush your teeth, you use the bathroom, you go get coffee. Maybe you go get coffee. First things first, do this first. And the longer I'm in this program, and as I actually began to work these 12 steps, I mean, really, take these steps seriously and begin to look at where I was powerless over alcohol, where I was powerless over certain people and certain situations and things, my feelings in life, and how my life was absolutely unmanageable, and how I began to invite and believe in a power that was greater than myself. And I began to look at my inventory, take my inventory. And in here we hear, you should not take anyone's inventory but yourselves, right? Well, I don't quite buy that. I think, and I don't say that to be funny, to be flip, or to, you know, be demeaning. I really believe that because it's important if I'm in a relationship with someone, whoever that someone is, be it my husband, my children, my friends, my sponsees, my sponsor, it's important that I know who they are. not to blame, not to criticize, but to be in reality. Because I don't know about you, but I did not live in reality. I lived in fantasy. I lived in the what ifs. I lived in how you should be, and if you'd only, I'd be okay. So first things first, you know, it's about, I have to put God first. Am I doing God first? Am I going to God? Or am I going to the power, whatever that power is for any of you, you know, or am I expecting somebody else to fill my needs? I'm expecting somebody else to make me happy. We've heard it all. I mean, I could get up and go ditto, ditto, you know, and it'd all be good. But I it's my 25 minutes. So, you know, God first. And then, you know, live and let live. I used to try and live somebody else's life, not mine. I tried to be somebody else for anyone else, whoever you may be, so that I could be okay in your eyes, so that you wouldn't have the feelings that made me uncomfortable. And then we'd be okay. I like to say peace at any price. And on the surface, it looks peaceful. But underneath the surface and inside me, there's this turmoil going on that is killing me. Breath by breath. Let it begin with me. I remember I was complaining about my husband to my sponsor one day, and she said, you know, it's got to begin with you. What do you think that means? She says, we must take the lead. What do you think that means? And I said, well, I guess we in Al-Anon and, you know, AA and us in the program must take the lead with our families. And she says, yeah, that's pretty much true, she says. But how I really see it is that it has to begin with you. You're the one who has to stop the merry-go-round. Have you ever seen that pamphlet we have in Al-Anon called The Merry-Go-Round of Denial? I get this pamphlet in my head sometimes that I'm going, am I going to stay on that merry-go-round and we're going to go round and round and round in circles? Or am I going to step off? Somebody's got to take that first step off the merry-go-round. But I don't want it to be me. What if I do that and it doesn't work? What if I do that and I've wasted my time, I've wasted my energy, I've wasted my words, you know, and nothing happens? What happens if I do that and I become vulnerable? Because isn't this what this is really about? The whole thing for me in this program, this comes down to a couple of things. Well, several things. First is God. God's got to be first. Either God's in charge or it's me trying to be in charge. It's me trying to be overly responsible for your all's life. Or it's me not trying to be responsible for my life but be responsible for yours. I think I said that in the same way twice. So different ways. So it's either God first, okay? And then the other thing is that, give me a minute. It just went away. I don't know where I was. It was good, though. It'll come back or it won't. You know, you turn 61, man, it just boggles. So let it be. I got to take the lead, you know, and I've got to live my life. Not trying to live your life. And the slogan we have, how important is it? Well, I used to make everything more important than it needed to be. Or I would make it unimportant because I didn't want to have to deal with it. I'd make mountains out of molehills, and I'd turn the real critical things into nothing, and I'd minimize it. You know, I have this woman that I sponsor, and I was working with her, and we were talking about keeping the focus on us. And I said, you know, every time I'm something's going on, I have to bring it back to what's my stuff, and I keep the focus on me. I have to, if I'm going to be in recovery, I have to keep the focus on me. And she you know, we ended the conversation and we were talking the next week, and she said, you know, she said, I've been thinking about what you said. And she said, I've been thinking especially about that bit about keeping the focus on me. She says, I don't think that's such a good idea for me. And I thought, oh, man, here we go. Little conflict. Now she's going to argue with me, right? And I said, well, why don't you tell me? Excuse me. I said, why don't you tell me what you're thinking? And she said, well, she says, what I'm thinking is that if I put the focus on me, she says, all of a sudden I think everything has to be the way I see it. She says, now I know that's not how you mean it. She says, but that's how I interpret it. How I interpret it is that I'm right, they're wrong, and I'm the only one who knows. I'm the one who has it all, and it all becomes about me. And I said, okay, and give me more. And she said, well, here's what I'm thinking. She says, what has come to my mind, I mean, you talk out of the mouths of babes. She says, what came to my mind is that I think I have to put the focus on God. How about that one? Who's working with who? She said, I think I've got to put the focus on God. And I thought, absolutely. You know, I was telling my sponsor, I don't know what in the world I'm going to say. I said, what do I know? And she goes, you know about conflict. You know about turmoil. You know, when I got to you guys, how I dealt with it and how I learned to deal with it in my family was that you didn't talk. You kept your mouth shut. You pretended nothing was going on. And I don't know about you, but we had the kind of silence in my home, in both my home growing up and in the home when, you know, before my husband and I got into recovery, where silence was painful. Silence was devastating. It was very uncomfortable. That's what I knew. That was one of my tools. You don't talk about things. And I also had this belief. You don't talk about anything if it's going to make someone uncomfortable, or if it's going to embarrass someone, or if it's going to make someone feel bad. Now that sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds right. But you know what it does for someone like me? I build walls. I build walls between you and me by not talking about things. And before I know it, the pressure cooker lid is on and the steam is going and I am ready to blow because I don't talk about stuff. And finally, it's that old slogan, I don't know what you'd call it, phrase, the straw that broke the camel's back. And I was afraid of conflict because I didn't talk about things as they needed to be addressed. I waited till all of a sudden I blew up. And you know what hit the fan. That's how I dealt with things. By working the steps, what happened was I began to know me. I began to know who I was, and I began to know who I wasn't. I never would have had that happen to me if I hadn't worked these 12 steps. And as a result of working these 12 steps, it gave me a relationship with a God. And I ended up with we say there are no Al-Anon promises, but how I read the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, to me, that's a promise. My 25 minutes. Me, my opinion. For me, it's a promise. And I have this spiritual awakening, you know, and all of a sudden, I'm a different person. And every time I work these steps in my life, over different situations, with different people, I have a new experience and I have a deeper spiritual awakening. And I'm getting more and more use out of these spiritual principles that we have. You know, I could never have worked the traditions or invited use of the traditions in my life without having first worked the steps, because I didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't care about anyone except me. Now, I cared about my children. I cared about my family, but it was all in relationship to me. Now, how selfish and self-centered is that? Where is there room for conflict resolution in that? There is no room. You see, I became God. I was God in my family. I was God to everyone I was in a relationship with. There is no way to have any conflict resolution when you think like that. And that's how I thought. Now, I didn't know it. You don't know what you don't know. But as working these steps revealed to me, and as I became closer to the God of my understanding, and I continue that closeness through prayer and meditation, all of a sudden it's not all about me. All of a sudden I'm willing to have an open mind. I'm willing to put myself in somebody else's shoes. I never could have done that. And I wish that I could have said, I did this within the first several years of being in Al-Anon. Yesterday I celebrated 29 years. Yeah. Believe me, I have not stayed for the right reasons. And it's a testimony to Al-Anon that we don't kick anyone out. Because if we were all well, we wouldn't need to be here, would we? I stay here because I'm sick. I still have turmoil. You know, we have stuff going on in our family. You know, you get into the program and you get better, but you have children and they marry these people. And and then they have these little people, you know? And it's like they don't know our spiritual principles. They don't have a program. And you know what? They don't want anything to do with the program. They want to know nothing about it. They could care less. As far as they're concerned, we could take the program and put it where the sun don't shine. Because they don't like it. Because in my family, you know what happened? The program took us away from them. Does it always happen? No. But we, speaking for myself, I was a sick person. I was a sick person. I was never emotionally available for my children. I was never emotionally available for my husband. But working with people in this program and sponsoring people and being sponsored gave me the ability to be open to others. So now I get to take this stuff home and practice it in my home. The old time, remember Arbutus? Oh, man, loved Arbutus. I remember her pointing her finger and going, if you don't have a program at home, you don't have a program. And I didn't have a program at home for the longest time. I had it in the meetings. I had it with my sponsees. I had it with my sponsor. But I didn't have it at home. Just because we don't agree doesn't make one of us right and the other wrong. How about that one? Differences do not make me an inferior person. How about that one? I'll just throw out a couple of little tidbits. Oh, I love this one. You were talking about service and going to conference. When I served as delegate, this was a long time ago, but I remember talking to a friend of mine, and he asked me, how do you like the conference? What did you think of it? And I said, you know, it was pretty difficult. It was pretty difficult because in my first year, we talked about some pretty heavy-duty stuff, and there were a lot of changes. And I thought, man. In fact, my husband came and met me after the conference, and he's sitting here today to support me. How's that for progress? Yeah. And he's a good guy. And I said, how was your week? He goes, how was your week? Was it great? And I'm like, I'm never coming back here again. He goes, what? I said, I'm not coming back next year. I'm not coming back. I'm not doing it. He goes, why? And, you know, I proceeded to tell him all this stuff. And so when my friend said, how did you like it? I said, you know what? I said, it was hard. It reminded me, it seemed like very political. Now, I said that. Now, if you've ever done service work in the area or your district or your home group or whatever, I mean, you get it, right? He said, well, what do you mean? He said, what do you think politics is? Well, I didn't expect that. You know, I was just putting a word out. I didn't expect to know what it was. It just sounded a good word to use when I'm complaining, right? So, I mean, that makes for good conflict resolution, you know, just to repeat stuff without thinking about it, right? Without knowing what you really think and believe about it. So I said, well, just, I don't know. And he said, well, here's what I think about politics. He said, I think politics is the art of compromise. That's all he said. And this friend was like that. You know, he would just throw out these little one-liners at me and then go his merry way and leave me with it. And, well, I went back the next year, and it was a different conference. Go figure. And the next couple of conferences were different conferences. You see, because there's no way to resolve conflict, as far as I'm concerned, when I think I have all the answers, when I think I know, when I'm not willing to have an open mind, when I'm not willing to listen, when I'm not invested in unity, when I'm really not interested in a solution. The first thing I have to ask myself is, do I really want to resolve this issue? Or do I just want to go along my little way with my eyes shut and blaming everybody else? Because I'm good at it. You probably aren't, but I am. But that's not how I feel good today any longer. That doesn't feel right for me. That's how I got to you. And when I do that, I know I'm not invested in my relationship with God. When I'm invested and I'm in the right place and I'm aligned with the Spirit of my Creator, all of a sudden I'm open to what the universe has to bring. And sometimes it's not that the solution and the resolving is going to happen right now. Sometimes it means that I'm waiting and willing, no matter how uncomfortable, to sit in the I don't know. My sponsor says that's the hardest thing we will ever do in this program, is to sit and do nothing. Because we think we have to take action, be a human doer. Not a human being, you know? I want to do, I want to do, I want to do, I want to make it happen. I want it all resolved now so that I can forget it and put it out of my mind. That's not how we work as human beings. We always have to keep the dialogue open. You know, there's this thing, and I can't remember where it is in our stuff, but it's in our stuff, I promise you, that says, when we don't agree, we need more dialogue. It means we need to talk more so that we can all come together. And I'll end with this little bit. Years ago, when I first came in, we had this delegate, and her name was Henrietta. She passed away a long time ago. And Henrietta used to say, whatever the problem, love is always the answer. And I just read in Courage to Change, because I was looking at everything in having to do with conflict resolution, and one of my favorite quotes in here, let's see, I'm not going to find it, but it says, everything but love leaves rust upon your soul. I don't want rust in my soul. So I'm going to try and reside in the love of God, even as unsuccessfully as I do it sometimes. And I'm going to keep using these tools and keep going to meetings and work these steps and keep going to God so that hopefully I can be eventually the person God fully wants me to be. And so that I'm not the causer of conflict, but that I can sit in openness and be a person who is willing to listen. Thank you.